And we return. It's today's topical currents. We're all relaxed, focused, Bonnie.
Yes, and tranquil and serene and ready to
explore.
Eat? Ready Is that what you eat? Said, Linda?
I said ready to eat, always, in a tranquil manner.
Of all the many, many episodes on the award-winning West Wing TV series, none ever featured the rigors of the White House chef. It would seem to be a daunting job. Well, chef, author, and syndicated columnist Linda Gastenheimer is with us, and she'll lead our discussion with a former White House chef.
Right. But, well, you know, what's it like cooking for the leaders, world leaders, on a daily basis? And how do the first families interact with their staff? Well, we'll have an insider's look into the personalities of our first families with former White House chef John Mueller. His book is Dining at the White House. Let's welcome John Mueller. Hello, John, are you there?
I am. It's great to be here. Thank you, Linda. Mm-hmm.
Great to have you. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. Do you have any questions for John Mueller about the White House dinners or what goes on downstairs instead of upstairs at the White House? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-9576. WLRN. Do you have email today?
We do, radio@WLRN.org, and we also have Twitter, which is @topicalcurrents.
Great. And of course, always with us is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype, and you can read Fred's wine column in the Miami Herald. Fred, what are we drinking today?
Well, I'm going to talk about drinking at the White House. It goes on.
Okay.
I was hoping you were going to do that, friend.
Okay.
Wasn't that Ulysses S. Grant?
That was one of the big ones, yeah. But he wasn't always in the White House, but he was always drinking.
Okay, John Mueller. First of all, congratulations on dining at the White House. You know, I was fascinated by the stories and some amazing personal photos of three presidential families, President Herbert Walker Bush, Bill Clinton, and George Bush. Wonderful book.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I wanted to give it a nice, intimate, insider's view of not only what I do, but how you could maybe experience dining at the White House, you know. So give an overall view of how I develop menus, how daily life is at the White House, and how I can operate under breakfast, lunch, and dinner for serving the President and First Lady.
Well, it is a very intimate look, and also you do give the recipes. Now, what was it like? I mean, three different from Texas to Arkansas and back to Texas. Mm-hmm. What was it like working under the different presidents?
A little bit of Kenny Bumpport in between there too, you know.
Right.
But absolutely, it was extraordinary. I mean, you know, I didn't get the job because I knew a senator or this or that. I just happened to know a local chef there in Washington that gave me the opportunity to do it. And all of a sudden, you get catapulted onto the second floor of the White House, and you're in this little kitchen overlooking the North Grounds in Pennsylvania Avenue, and the President First Lady are just a swinging door away from you. It was just very extraordinary.
Were you one of many candidates for it, or were you just chosen, just selected?
Well, I know there's a few candidates. There might have been at least three or four. I never got in, or did Chef Pierre Chambrin ever mention exactly how many there were, but they had a list of candidates they were looking at. But one thing that set me apart from the other candidates at that point in time was that I'd worked in France from 1984, 85, and 86, about 2.5 years. And Chef Pierre Chambrin, who's French-born but an American citizen, and you had to be an American citizen to work full-time at the White House, was looking not for another Frenchman, but for an American to come in that knew something about French cooking. So little did I know that little séjour in France is what set me apart from the other candidates at that point in time.
Oh. What got you the job? So now, what were the... Now, you said you were working on the second floor of the White House. Now, the kitchens, I would assume, were downstairs, and then mm-hmm. upstairs, what is there, a private kitchenette for the family, the private family?
It's exactly that there. On the ground floor kitchen, like if you look at the White House on Pennsylvania Avenue, the north portico, underneath the portico and those steps there is actually where our walk-in boxes are and our food is stored. There's actually a wine cellar off on the right-hand side underneath the north portico, and then our storeroom's right there. And then the kitchen is on the ground floor on the west side of the building. You can't see that from Pennsylvania Avenue. But then if you go straight up two stories and look at the far right window on the second floor of the White House, there is a small kitchen there, And it's just like a home kitchen. And that's where we would do final cooking and plate presentation. I hand it to the butler. The butler goes through the swinging doors and right into the dining room, which is right next door.
So that's for the private dining, or is that when you have state dinners?
That's for private dining, for state dinners. And we'll do other dinners and things upstairs. Like there's the Oval Room, which is on the second floor that we do some meals in from time to time, and some of the other rooms. Not too often, but from time to time we'll do it. But mainly, a lot of the entertaining is done on the state floor. So on the same side of the house, the west side of the house, on the southwest corner, should I say, is the state dining room. And there we hold 130 guests, 13 tables of 10. And we will bring the food up one level from the ground floor to the first floor.
And I understand that the kitchen that you use for the formal dining, it's like smaller, like, what, 35 feet square or something?
It's not that big at all. People are rather surprised at how small the kitchen is. You know, it's not huge. It used to be a lot larger. I saw pictures of it from like 100 plus years ago, and it kept on getting cut up, and like the Secret Service took over part of it. The curator's office is there. In fact, inside the curator's office, right next on the other side of the kitchen there, is there's a big fireplace, like they used to hang pots and stuff in. Now there's file cabinets pushed into it, you know?
Well, let me ask you, the different tastes of the different presidents, how did you handle it? Do they give you a list of what they like? I mean, was Bush really against broccoli and that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. He was. I mean, I got there shortly after that little incident with the broccoli there, and at that point, since he was already in office, the chef Pierre Chambrin, he wrote out a list of likes and dislikes. And of course, broccoli was on it, but there was a lot more likes than there were dislikes.
And was Father? I'm sorry.
I would just say he had probably the largest palate than of all the presidents that I served there. I think they were very well traveled. They like a lot of different cuisines, and they like a lot of different meats and seafood and shellfish and what have you. And I found them to be a little more engaging and adventurous at times for food.
So you were there. You had, I mean, breakfast, lunch, and dinner had to be prepared for them.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Right. And what about the children? There were young children in the White House at that time those presidents.
Yeah. Well, when I arrived there, of course, the Bushes, all their immediate children were older, but they did have some grandchildren that would stay over from time to time, and that we would cook for them.
There was Chelsea Clinton, and there was some of the younger children there.
Yes. Well, Laura, not Laura, but the twins.
Jenna and
Barbara.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, go back to Chelsea first. When she arrived, she was 12 years old, and then she turned 13 like a month or so later. And yes, I grew up with her. To a degree there. I mean, she was there until she was 18 or so. And I actually have a nice photo of her saying goodbye to her as she was going off to Stanford University.
Right. I read in the book, it was very touching, that you became very close to them, the families and to the children, obviously being with them all the time. I mean, did the kids come in the kitchen and want to make cookies with you or something?
Well, those type of things have occurred there, you know. A lot of times they might send down a list of ingredients, and they want to bake it themselves up in that second floor kitchen and just have some fun on a Saturday afternoon, you know.
Trying to be normal people.
Yeah, really.
Absolutely.
Right.
It's hard to do sometimes there, you know, but up on the second floor there, you know, it's a political free zone. We're just there to entertain them and help them enjoy their time there with food.
Right. Well, we have a call here. Let's go to Scott in Pompano. Scott, hi. You're on the air.
Hi there. I've got a couple of quick questions, please. One is, so if the family wanted to make their own meals, you could bring in the food and the wives or the president would cook the food for themselves?
He's the president. He can do whatever he wants there, you know. the whole place is wide open to him there, you know. If he said, hey, John, step to the side, he can definitely do that. I've never had the president do that. I think one time Mrs. Clinton, after they just got in office, she called down for a couple of eggs in a pan to make some, it was an omelet or some scrambled eggs for Chelsea because she wasn't feeling too good one morning. But after a while, I mean, it's pretty easy just to pick up the phone, call down and say, hey, I need an omelet or something like that. You know, we can cook it up and send it up to them.
The second thing I was going to ask about, I know that George W. Bush is a recovering alcoholic. What did you do when it came time for toasts and things like that at dinners and functions? Maybe that's a Fred Tasker question, but I know you had to deal with that probably.
Yeah, he just had an occasional non-alcoholic beer. He enjoyed that from time to time. But that was it, but I never saw him touch anything. But he would toast. If my understanding from what goes, because I'm not in the dining room, I'm in the back to getting ready with all the work that it takes to get the food out. But I believe my understanding is that, and don't quote me 100%, but I believe the wine is there. He'll toast it, and maybe act like he's taking a sip, but I don't see him actually consuming the glass. He'll just make the toast with the glass there.
Well, you know, another very poignant story in the book I found was your description of what actually happened inside the White House on 9/11. You were getting ready for a congressional picnic that day, so tell us what happened there.
Yeah, there was the congressional barbecue that day, and a lot of people did not realize that we were going to have all of Congress down there between 5 and 6 o'clock that evening. We had scheduled to have about 2,000 people on the south grounds of the White House. And I'll just give you an image, because I just saw it just last month here when the 9/11 anniversary came up again here. If you see any photos of the president arriving back at the White House in the helicopter, mm-hmm. you see him talking, but look around the edge of the photo. That you'll see picnic tables pushed off and all and on top of each other all over the place, because where that helicopter landed, he could not land there earlier in the day because they had picnic tables all over the south grounds. He actually left from what's referred to as a reflecting pool earlier in the day.
So what happened when the event actually occurred? I mean, were you rushed out of the White House? What happened?
We were in full production mode when somebody came in and said that there was a plane that hit one of the Twin Towers. We didn't know how extreme it was. So after a couple of minutes after I finished doing what I was doing, I said, let me go over to the storeroom. And I knew they had a little TV. Maybe they'll have that on. And so I got over there. It might have been 5 or 10 minutes later. There was no rush to go do it at that point in time. So I remember walking in, looking up at the TV. And as soon as I looked at the TV, I see smoke coming out of one of the towers. And then I see a plane veering in and crashing into the other. And I just turned to look. The second I walked in, I saw that plane hit. And I looked at the guys and said, how did you get a picture of the building burning before it got hit? And they looked at me and go, we think that might be another plane. So I think I might have walked in right when that second plane hit. The chief usher of the White House came up behind me and said, John, this looks like a terrorist attack. There's no party tonight. Let's get everything broken down, get all the food secure, and let's get all the chefs out of here and personnel that are not full pass holders. Because we had part-time people come in and help us out for large functions, what have you.
So they immediately, when anything like that happens, they want to empty the White House because they didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, at that point, they didn't know that there was going to come a plane to Washington.
Yeah, all they wanted to do was clear the White House out of non-pass holders. Like, I could stay because I'm full-time, but they wanted to get the part-time people out. So there was no panic to evacuate at that point in time. Let's get this thing broken down and clean up the kitchen, and let's get everybody out of here, non-full-time personnel. And as we were breaking that down, it was like 20 minutes later or so, I was inside the kitchen doing that. The White House chef, Walter Scheib, was on the south grounds orchestrating what was being set up out there for the picnic that evening. He came running in the kitchen, high-stepping, running into the kitchen, and almost out of breath, and he was out of breath, said, the Pentagon just got hit. We could be next. Everybody out of here. And then I just looked at him like, whoa. I mean, I could not hear it. He heard the crash, and he saw the explosion from the south grounds of the White House.
So you could see it from the White House. Well, very, very difficult day, and I'm sure things changed forever at the White House itself after that. We're going to take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. My guest today is former White House chef John Mueller. He's been giving us an insider's view of the White House. We'll take a short break, and we'll be back with more. And we're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and our guest is former White House chef John Mueller. He's been giving us a behind-the-scenes look at the personalities and experiences of dining at the White House, and his book is titled just that, Dining at the White House. And John Mueller is going to be here in Miami at the Miami Book Fair. The book fair is from November 17th to the 24th. He's going to do a cooking demo on Saturday and a reading on Sunday. But if you want more information about the book fair, it's miamibookfair.com. Well, it's time for dinner in minutes. So for those of us who are not dining at the White House, or we cannot phone someone and have an omelet delivered to us within minutes, it's dinner in minutes. And today's is an autumn burger slider with red pepper and sweet potatoes. Now, if you use a microwave oven, you can make this dinner really in minutes. And what I like best about it, there's no pots to wash. Everything goes into the dishwasher from the microwave. So I microwaved some sliced mushrooms and onions, and then I put half of that, I mixed it into some ground lean beef. And then I mixed some mustard and maple syrup together and put half that mixture into the ground beef, make them into patties, and they cook about 3 or 4 minutes, and put them on those little small rolls, slider rolls. And then I put some...
You mean you cook the burger in the microwave?
No, I sauteed those.
Oh, I see.
Yes, I did have. Yeah, I'm sorry. I did have one pot. Thank you.
I'm happy to hear that too.
Okay, everybody's got me then. All right. So yes, you did saute that. I do have one pot, and then I add the remaining mushrooms and onions and the sauce on top. But the side dish is in the microwave, and that's some sweet potatoes and some red bell peppers. Cut them into cubes, and I cook those in the microwave. So that whole recipe and a photograph, that's at dinnerinminutes.com. You can get all the ingredients and the proper way to cook it. Right, Joe?
Indeed.
And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Now, Fred Tasker, are we drinking at the White House today?
Well, certainly. Wine at the White House is actually a pretty interesting topic. I didn't know a whole lot about it, so I Googled those words for today's show. And I was stunned by how political drinking anything in the White House can be. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm taking this from press reports, so I hope Chef Mohler will correct me if I get anything wrong. But first, state dinners serve only good patriotic American wines. No snooty French Marisots for this crowd. And even that can be controversial.
So that is true. Okay.
Presidents like to feature American wines from lesser-known up-and-coming areas. So at last year's inaugural dinner, they served a Riesling from Fox Run Winery in New York's Finger Lakes. And Fox Run quickly got an angry email from a customer, and I presume it was a Republican, calling it a sellout and vowing never again to buy a Fox Run wine. So there's a little risk there. Also, with the second inaugural, the White House served another very American wine, California's Korbel Russian River Natural Champagne. And this drew notes from the French because real champagne is made only in the geographical district north of Paris that's called Champagne. And bubblies from other areas are supposed to be called merely sparkling wines. And if you know the French, they're serious about this. Mm-hmm. In general, though, it's a real boost in prestige if the White House serves your wine. When the president of Bedell Cellars on Long Island learned his 2009 Merlot was served at Obama's second inauguration, he said, "It's kind of cool to think that not only the president and the first lady, but the Supreme Court and all the living presidents drank the wine that I made." On the other hand, if you're a winery, don't try to send, now this I want to see if Chef Mohler agrees with this, don't try to send the White House a free sample. Since 9/11, all samples are destroyed, and the White House sends a note explaining and apologizing, complete with a Polaroid picture to prove it. The White House doesn't take freebies, though. It insists on paying, although it does pay the wholesale price.
Are they worried that there might be something in the wine? Is that why they do that?
I suppose.
Uh-huh. Chef Mohler, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, after 9/11, we had we already had some pretty stringent guidelines on how we get food and beverage into the White House. And they came to us and were very concerned about that. And they even said that we had reason to believe that somebody might be trying to deliver something to us.
Especially with all that anthrax flying around.
And ricin was the other one that they were concerned about at that point in time, I remember.
Right.
And we revisited how our steps are, and we took a little bit more stringent steps on how we bring everything in. And of course, a bottle of wine, who knows what somebody can uncork and recork something is a possibility. So there's no risk here.
Right.
So they want to be able to get something that's been randomly picked up, or somebody who's already pre-authorized to pick something up and send it to us.
Interesting. Well, finally, serious snooty gourmets accuse Obama of having poor taste in beverages. When he had that so-called beer summit that you might remember to mend fences between a prominent black historian and a police officer that he had accused of racial profiling, Obama was seen drinking a Bud Light, which is not exactly a gourmet choice. And he was also spotted drinking Kendall Jackson's Vintner's Reserve Chardonnay, which is fairly sweet, while cool with it wine drinkers always insist on very dry wines. Mm-hmm. And, of course, to make things worse, Michelle Obama, as part of her national anti-obesity campaign, has been encouraging people to drink more water. And to us wine snobs, of course, them's fighting words.
Well, you got to watch how much water you drink because it causes rust, you know?
That's right.
Well, were you involved, Chef Mueller, in choosing the wines, or was that somebody else's choice job?
Mainly somebody else's choice there, but I had some influence to a degree, because we would get cases of wine in for large events, and then we'd have some left over that they would put in and cellar it. We wouldn't buy wine now and plan on serving it 3 or 4 years down the road. We would write the menus. We had somebody, I don't think I'd really mention the name of who it is, but there was people that we would send the menu to in California. They would look at the menu and try and pair up something, try and get in some boutique wineries to send wine to us. And, of course, like you had mentioned, that we accept nothing free. We would purchase it and have it shipped to us. And so when we cellared the leftover bottles that were not consumed that evening, we would look down the road and other smaller events, say, hey, we have a 2 or 3 bottles of this. Let's try and pair it with a menu. So
I gather that the White House actually has a fairly small wine cellar.
Yeah, it's not super small, but it's not super big either. I mean, I can't remember exactly how many bottles in there. They can get quite a few in there. It's probably over 1,000 if they really want to get them in there. But like I said, we didn't cellar it. We would hold wine for events, and then it would just basically use as we need it.
Okay, well, we're almost out of time. Did you have one quick question?
One quick thing for Fred. According to Skype, Fred, it's your birthday?
Not today. My birthday was the 25th.
Oh, well, that's what Skype said. I guess you never know.
Well, happy birthday, Fred.
Happy birthday.
On that note, it's been a very interesting week. Chef John Mueller, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you. I look forward to being down in Miami next month here. Mm-hmm.
Yes. His book is Dining at the White House, and it's a fascinating read with details of daily life at our nation's first home, along with some delicious recipes. And I must say that I got caught up with reading about Julia Child when she was not interested and she was upset with what happened at the White House, and then she was happy with John Mueller's things. I mean, it's really wonderful, wonderful stories. Again, November 17th through the 24th is the Miami Book Fair. Next week, we'll be celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month with TV personality Ingrid Hoffman. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Join me then.